look at traffic stops, you look at the mass incarceration. It's a quality of life issue where individuals that are growing up with this skin tone have this fear of interaction with the police. I think that is more telling than any data and any more numbers, the stories. And so we have multiple stories, millions of stories around the nation of harassment. We're living under a terrorist state, a police terrorist state, and we need some way to fight back and protect ourselves.
Mudin, the state did a look at the last 5 years in South Carolina of police shootings. 209 people have been shot. That's about a person every 10 days shot by police in South Carolina. What are you doing about this?
Most definitely. So we're going to have a 46-county tour around South Carolina. Right now, we're getting our GAL together. We're getting our organization together. We have a lot of help coming in from out of town. We have people from Ferguson coming through, people from New York coming through, really helping us. Again, Project We Are Watching You is the campaign that's going to really allow us to shift police culture. And so we're taking our cameras, following police around, saying, we are watching you, announcing our presence. That is the most transformative dynamic that we can instill right now into what's going on.
Mudin Dabaha, we thank you very much for being with us, organizer with Black Lives Matter in Charleston, South Carolina. And thanks so much to Jay Stanley with the American Civil Liberties Union, Know Your Rights, and his companion article that he's written, You Have Every Right to Photograph That Cop. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website's democracynow.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our host, Joe Uris. Today, we'll talk about the history of American relations with Iran.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Art of the Story 11th Annual Storytelling Festival. This year, Washington County Cooperative Library Services hosts its 11th annual week-long storytelling extravaganza, features 17 storytelling performances throughout Washington County. Performers in this year's festival include Judith Black, Sam Payne, performers from Portland's Brody Theater Company, and more. Again, that's the Washington County Library's 11th Annual Storytelling Festival, The Art of the Story, from April 11th through April 18th. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Oh, I've got a home, I'm just rambling around.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, happening Tuesday the 21st from 5:30 to 7:45 p.m. at the Central Library in downtown Portland, and Sunday the 26th from 1 to 3 p.m. at the North Portland Library. The Portland Renters Assembly is a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right. There'll be a chance for individuals to tell their stories about skyrocketing rents, no-cause evictions, dubious fees, and other kinds of exploitation carried out in the name of rent. There'll be childcare, snacks, and a chance to get connected to resources for moving forward together. For more information about the Portland Renters Assembly, go to kboo.fm and click on the right side for community events.
Portland School Board elections are May 19th. What's your question?
My name is Kelvin Hall. Should parents have to pay for daycare as being requested by the school district when next year it'll be free?
Tune in to KBOO April 27th through 30th at 5:45 for special school board election coverage.
Bomberan. 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 Bom, bom, bom. Anyway. Bum bum bum. Anyway. Bum 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 bum. Bomberan. 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 Bum 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 bum. Bomberan.
Bum 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 aran. bum, 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 bum,
bum, bum, bum, bum, bum, bum, bum, bum, bum, bum, bum,
children, Bomberan, bomb, 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 Bomberan, 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 Bomberan.
Okay, hey, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe isn't here. This is Joe Uris. I'm going to talk a little bit about the history of Iran, both the classic and recent, and I'm going to assert certain number of things. The first thing I want to, just as an overview of where I'm coming from and maybe where a lot of you are at and maybe where some of the people here at KBOO are at, not all of them by any means, is my perspective, which is we are in the late stage of capitalism. And we are experiencing something which I call friendly fascism, a new form of totalitarianism. And we, all of us, have a duty, a responsibility, and a need to resist in the face of all this. Coming up is going to be in 16 an election, which at this point looks to be like some kind of crazy right-wing thing sponsored by the most reactionary elements of monopoly capitalism. And on the other side, with a monopoly capitalism base as well, the traditional neocon, Clinton, who Hillary, who is by no means a great liberal, except on the issue of women's rights, and we have to honor her for that. And this is going to be the choice we're probably going to be facing, and it's not, by any means, a choice that is adequate to the situation. So, but apart from that, I want to talk a lot about Iran, and I think it's very important. Right now, this government, the government of this president, is at the verge of negotiating a reasonable, I think, approach to the fact that Iran has the potential to develop nuclear power and the implication that that also would involve creating the potential for nuclear weapons and, of course, the United States being, how shall I put this, in a bizarre partnership with Israel against Iran, a partnership that includes on our side Saudi Arabia, which is essentially a slave state operated by Muslim extremists, and the Gulf states that are allied with them, who are also at this time making war to the south of Saudi Arabia. All of this is pretty much ignored by most Americans. And I want to talk a little bit about the history of Iran. And then I want to talk very briefly about the current events. And then I want to open it up for you. So be patient, please. First of all, as you all probably know, Iran was one of the great empires of the ancient world. It was called Persia. And the Persian Empire at various times extended over various amounts of territory. And I'm going to be very fast here. The significance of the spread of the Mongol Empire, of the Khanites, cannot be underestimated. Remember that we had at one point in history of the Euro-Asian continent an empire that extended all the way from China, all the way over to the Danube River. We tend to forget this. Much of Russia, what is today Russia, was part of the Khanate. All of Persia was part of the Khanate. Much of middle, what we call the Middle East, was part of the Khanate. And that is a significant force. But also, one of the things the Mongols did do was rebuild after they conquered, rebuild Persia in terms of its capabilities to provide food, to provide pasture lands, to have beautiful architecture and beautiful art. In the late 1500 to 1925, the early modern period, Iran was changed and had for a while the Safavid Empire. And then there was a horrible famine. I'm really skipping enormous amounts of history. I sort of apologize, but it's not the task here to do all the detail. In 1870 to 71, a famine struck Persia that was terrible and resulted in a constitutional revolution, in large part because of that, against the then Shah. And in 1925, there was a rise again of the Pahlavi family. The Shah, Reza, was the figure in significance there. And in 1908, this is a date you really should note, the company later called, well, originally called it Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, later, hey, get ready for this, called British Petroleum, a name that ought to be familiar to you, as it advertises on television its wondrous ways with fracking and other activities, and as it denies its responsibility for disasters in the Gulf and so on. This company essentially became the dominant economic force in Iran. There was a military coup in 1921, and that put in, and that was sponsored by the oil companies, and that put in the Raza, the basically the current, the up till then current government of the Shahs. In 1941, consequent to World War II, both the Soviets and the British, and to a lesser extent the Americans, moved into Iran to protect the oil holdings against the attempts of the Nazis. Remember, the grand design of World War II was a huge pincer movement from Japan moving to the West and from Germany and its allies moving to the East with the definite goal of grabbing a hold of the entire holdings of Middle East oil. And, of course, the oil of the country of Iran. In 41, the British and the Soviets' invasions there were maintained. In 43, there was a famous Tehran conference attended by the U.S. president and others that established Iran as a nation state. But Soviet troops did not withdraw from the north of Iran. And the result of that and other struggles reestablished the holdings initially of the Shah, Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, pardon me. But that was, he was a figurehead. But, and in 51, a legitimate parliamentary government was created, and it was headed by a guy named Mohammad Mossadegh, very enlightened man. But in 53, the CIA and the British MI6, cooperating with the oil companies, destroyed that government. And it's a long story of all kinds of clever activities, propaganda, all kinds of efforts, basically American and British. And in its place was created a government which was totalitarian under the Shah. The Shah created something which was supported by the CIA called the SAVAK. The SAVAK was a terrorist secret police organization that engaged in horrible activities to control any efforts to create a democracy in Iran. Their typical activities involved all kinds of torture. They were particularly well known for the effort to destroy the families in Iran of those who resisted. The main method they used was really quite disgusting. It was to grab the women of a family and rape them repeatedly, thereby in a Mohammedan culture, not only in an Islamic culture, not only creating horrible crime, but creating in that cultural context a kind of disgrace that would control behavior. And that went on and on and on until the establishment of the Islamic Republic in 1979. At that point, the Shah wandered the world, went to the United States. The result of that, and this was under President Jimmy Carter, the result of that was the seizure of the American embassy and the capture of the staff there, and a long period of negotiation in which basically the Republicans made a deal with the Iranians not to release those people until after the election. This is pretty amazing and true, until after the election of Reagan. So that just sets things up a little bit. From 79 to 89, the government of Khomeini, he's a Shia clergyman, very respected, living in Europe for a long, long period of time as an exile, returns in triumph, and the Islamic Republic is created. In the years subsequent to that, the United States provides enormous forces to the government of Saddam Hussein. Remember Saddam Hussein? And Saddam Hussein, using American and British and other technologies, uses chemical weapons against the Iranians. And the Iraqi war goes on and on. It's a horrible, horrible war with much poisoning, much, much disgraceful action by Saddam Hussein, including poisoning to the north of the Kurds. This is all important. This is all part of the history that we, as Americans, kind of ignore. Well, what's Iran? They're, you know, so well. Iran's response to all of this, as a Islamic republic, has been to develop its own ability to defend itself, including the creation of a power base, electric power base, of nuclear power. And a lot of people in the United States, and this is really important, say, oh, they're going to have nuclear power and they're going to be able to build nuclear bombs. And the answer to that is, well, yeah, it could well happen. The notion that we in the West can control the proliferation of nuclear weapons is a lovely fantasy which hasn't been true for a long, long time. India has nuclear weapons. Pakistan, this is really scary, Pakistan and India both have nuclear weapons. North Korea, crazy land that it is, has nuclear weapons. The question then becomes, well, how do we limit this? And moreover, how do we keep these self-same countries from developing missiles that can deliver these weapons to crucial parts of the West, or to Saudi Arabia, or to all the other places? And this is very important, there have been several opportunities since the Iranian Revolution, since the creation of the Islamic State in Iran, when the U.S. could have made deals with the Iranians. But, and here I'm going to, much of my material I'm drawing on, I want to give them credit, from the wonderful publication, The Washington Spectator, which is, you know, go online, Washington Spectator, you know, ordering it, getting it, having that material will keep you far better informed than anything you can get out of the New York Times or any other reasonable news source, let alone the Oregonian. Basically, the United States formed a series of alliances tighter and tighter with Israel. Israel is the country that perceives currently Iran as the major danger to its survival. Iran certainly supported various Shia revolutionary efforts in places like Lebanon and other parts of the Middle East. I'm going to make this brief because I want to give you an opportunity to call. But the U.S. had a chance in 89 under George H.W. Bush to use Iran as a counterweight to Iraq, use Iraq as a counterweight to Iran. The United States essentially developed a policy which was pro-Israeli and pro-Saudi Arabian, which has continued to this day against Iran. The big beneficiaries of this, in terms of money and power, are Raytheon and Lockheed. Now, pay attention to that, because it's really a part of my argument about late-stage capitalism. That is, that the defense industry guides the policies of the United States, even when it's counter to the interests of the United States as a nation state. And the creation of weapon systems, delivery systems, particularly missile systems, by these two companies have resulted in enormous numbers of aircraft and missiles in the hands of the Gulf states, and have created a situation in which Iran seeks counter response to that. This is where we are at today. This is the situation today there. I'm not going to go into Cuba or discussions of Venezuela or the multitude of post-Soviet era efforts by the United States to create an American empire in the world, both economically and politically. I will say that the behavior of the modern state of Israel under the current leadership is clearly a warrior state, is clearly a state designed and pushing the crushing of all Islamic resistance within the borders of Palestine and in the region as a whole, and has created a situation, and I blame Israel for this, in which it is virtually impossible to arrive at a peaceful settlement to the Palestine-Israeli situation. All of that must be seen as the background for what has been finally, under this administration, under the Obama administration, an attempt to normalize, pardon me, relations with Iran. There's much more data here, much more information. Nothing I am telling you is controversial. Nothing I'm telling you here is deniable. It's all real. And when I have lots of callers sometimes who say, well, Iran's going to bomb, and Iran's going to have the nuclear weapon, and Iran's going to send missiles. Iran does not now have missiles. But here's an irony, adequate to reach much of Europe. Here's an irony. The United States installed missile defense systems and missiles in countries that it had committed itself to, committed with the collapsed Soviet Union, the new Russia, not to be, to make neutral places like Poland and Czechoslovakia. We installed systems there which can deliver missiles, nuclear missiles, or any other kind, directly into the Russian heartland. This gives excuse to a guy like Putin. So we continue this war, and the people who profit from this war, the Raytheons and the Lockheeds, and it is, every American is virtually propagandized on these issues. I am not trying to justify the government in the former Soviet Union. I do not think the government in Russia is a democratic government. I do not think Putin is a good guy. That's not the point. The point is that the U.S. is a leading force in this reestablishment of a Cold War and has been historically an agent for encouraging what was a war between Iraq and Iran, and essentially poisoned the land of Iraq in two wars using hardened spent uranium fuel systems, spent uranium shells in their warfare, scattering poisoned uranium dust everywhere, poisoning American troops as well. The destruction in the second war of some of the weapons of Hussein, weapons which had chemicals in them, chemicals developed in the West, essentially killed and hurt and left devastated many of the veterans from the United States Armed Forces, who today are still waiting for decent service, from decent honor from their government for their service in two unnecessary and horrible wars. And now the very great possibility of a reestablishment of that kind of thing. The weird thing of the struggle of the election of 16 will be, I am afraid, a struggle between a neocon who is essentially pushing forward a peaceful version of the imperial aggression policies, that's Hillary Clinton, and what I consider to be an insane reactionary capitalist interest class that are pushing through the Republican Party a war policy. When McCain talks about bombing Iran, remember, this is a guy who suffered greatly under capture by the North Vietnamese, and who has never seen a war subsequent to his release that he did not like. And he's a powerful figure. This is the situation we're in today. This is the world that we exist in. This is what is at stake in not only the election of 16, but in the current situation. And it's really, really important to understand when the Iranians say death to the USA, they are talking about their own history. They are talking about the role of the CIA in destroying their democracy post-World War II. They are talking about a situation in which war was waged by the government of Saddam Hussein at the encouragement of the United States against Iran. They are talking about repeated efforts to destroy the sovereignty and the power of Iran. This is not because they are crazy, crazy religious fanatics, though many may be. This is because young people and professors and people who are scholars who examine the history of Iran are convinced that the United States has exhibited over and over again a policy set which is designed not only to limit but possibly to crush the existence of the Iranian Shia state. Now, you need to think about that, because that will still be, no matter how the election of 16 goes, that will be a principal source of the great toothache in the head of the world. And I would add, Hillary Clinton is a neoconservative, which means that she will support those policies, but probably will be less fierce in her support for war than the Republicans, who are in a weird, weird space. So I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you about Iran. I want to hear from you about, if you will, Israel and its role in all of this. I want to hear from you about the role of the United States and the role of Russia, because all of these are major players. By the way, I saw in the New York Times on the way in today that Russia is going to cloud the whole thing by giving missiles, and I don't know what the range will be, to the Iranian state as the negotiations continue to try to create limited nuclear power development in Iran. So I open it up to you. I know I'm talking too fast, and I know this is a little chaotic, but hey, this is an opportunity to have a serious discussion about a serious set of problems without the kind of overlay of American mythology. So let's go to the phones, 231-8187. Ah, Michael, you're there. Hi, how are you? I figured you'd call.
Oh, yes, especially when you said something that was so wrong about Israel.
What was the thing I said that was wrong about Israel?
Well, you said that Israel is this military, whatever you said, that doesn't seek peace and only wants to conquer. You said words to that effect.
Well,
What
I said essentially is that Israel is a military state, and that Israel does not at this point show any real tendency to creating a two-state solution. I don't know if I said explicitly those words, but that's definitely what I think.
And what you left out was the peace offer Israel made in 2000 while Clinton was still president under Ehud Barak, in which they offered the Palestinians pretty much the entire West Bank with a certain number of territorial swaps, sharing of Jerusalem, basically everything you could imagine, and it was all based on the 67 borders, everything you could think the Palestinians would ever want in a Palestinian state, and the Palestinians turned it down.
That's true. I don't dispute that.
Not only did the Palestinians turn that offer down, but then they started what they called an intifada, which was actually a campaign of terrorism that had buses and pizza parlors and coffee cafes blowing up all over Israel, and the only way Israel got that to stop was by building that security barrier that everybody screams about, but they stopped the terrorism by doing that. So the reason there's no peace movement in Israel now, and the reason that you can say, well, Israel currently shows no interest in a two-state solution, is that when they offered that to the Palestinians, they got a response of a wave of terrorism instead of, yeah, let's do that. So, you know, for you to say what you said about Israel completely leaves that whole context out.
Well, I think that's a legitimate criticism in that I didn't mention that. I agree with you there. It is certainly the case that the Palestinians made a horrible, stupid error at that time. It is also the case, though, that the present situation in which Israel has become, I argue, a warrior state with a vast military operation and with no equality for its Palestinian people, no real equality, I think is a very serious thing.
No real equality? They have members of the parliament.
Yes, they do.
How many Jewish members of the Palestinian parliament are there?
Well, I don't know, but I don't believe there are any.
You don't know? The answer is zero.
Yeah, I believe there are none.
In fact, how many Jewish citizens of any status are there in the Palestinian areas? The answer, again, is zero, because any of them that were there would get killed.
Yes.
So, you know, you talk about Israel. Well, Israel has Palestinian citizens who may not have what you think of as full equality, but they get to vote, they get to have political parties, they get to live lives that are substantially better than the lives of Arabs in most other parts of the Middle East. So, your thing about Israel, I think, is just plain wrong.
What do you think is Israel's role at this point in the Middle East? How do you see its larger role?
They would like to continue to survive, and they're doing what they need to do to make sure that happens.
Okay. Not okay, I agree with you, but okay to hear from you.
Yeah, just I wanted to say something about your thing about Iran, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is, you completely left the jihadist element out of your description. It's like, oh, you know, these nice people and everything they're doing is because of the bad things the United States did. They're jihadists. The regime in Iran, starting with Khomeini, is jihadist, and they want to spread their version of fundamentalist Islam all over the world. They're basically the Shiite version of ISIS. And if you don't understand that, then you're leaving a huge piece of it out.
Well, I don't see them as equivalent. That is, ISIS is a very crazy jihadist movement. Iran, if the accusations are true in every case, is promoting various Shia movements in the world. And certainly that is not much different than the promotion of Sunniism by Saudi Arabia, which essentially functions as a partner and client state of the United States.
Well, you know, how crazy is Iran? During the Iran-Iraq War, how jihadist and crazy are they? During the Iran-Iraq War, at some point, the Iranian army needed to clear minefields. And the way they used that was they sent human waves of guys that were too young yet to be soldiers through the minefields to blow up the mines and martyr themselves and clear the minefields.
That's true. That is true.
Which is true.
Yeah.
Which is true. So, you know, I mean, the situation is not exactly the way you describe it. You're leaving this whole crazy jihadist aspect out of it.
Let me think about how you're phrasing this. It is certainly true that there is an insanity involved in all of this, and it is certainly true that the struggle between Shia and Sunni, which has flared up, I think, consequent to imperialist activities of Britain and the United States, and to some degree of the old Soviet Union, really, really have encouraged these kinds of movements. And I also would say that any kind of religiously based war system is inevitably a madness. So we agree, yet we disagree.
Okay, one last thing. The Palestinians didn't make a horrible mistake when they turned down the peace offer in 2000. The Palestinians revealed the true nature of what they were up to when they turned down that peace offer.
Well, that we'll never agree on.
Maybe not, but, you know, look at the Hamas charter and who voted Hamas in.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, so that's an interesting and different opinion from my own, and that is supported to some degree by an observation on the meaning of the rejection of an offer made by Israel, which should not have been rejected by the Palestinians. I want to hear from you, 231-8187. Who? Dave, you're on the air. Abe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy gets you going, doesn't he, Joe?
Well, I think he raises interesting points. I think that the struggle toward truth in this matter has to include that position.
He speaks for some people.
Well, yeah, he speaks for some people.
Yeah.
I suppose so do I. Anyway, what were you going to say beyond that?
Yeah, my point was all this stuff is happening in the context of climate change.
Yeah, good point.
That is really going to kick our butts.
Yeah.
And people are rising up, and the solution has to be some kind of getting power over corporations. And I just keep thinking that, why are they doing this stuff? Why are they, you know, why? And why are they militarizing the police? Why are they giving the police all these tanks and everything?
Mm-hmm.
And it makes, sometimes I think that they're preparing for us.
You mean you're suggesting that they're preparing a vast, conspiracy to crush dissent in the United States?
Yeah, and the world.
And the
Not
world.
Not just the United States, the whole world.
Well, yeah. I don't know if I buy into the conspiratorial aspect of that, but it is certainly the case that whenever you're estimating an enemy, you have to look at their capabilities. And it is certainly the case that the large military-industrial congressional complex, the thing that Eisenhower spoke against in 60-61, is real and has a major political aspect, and it is certainly the case the United States foreign policy seems to be basically the tail that is wagged by the Raytheon and Lockheed and other military-industrial forces. And it is certainly the case that we have an enormous armed force way beyond the necessities of a nation-state to defend itself. So I kind of agree with you, but I'm not sure about the conspiratorial aspect.
Well, I don't know, but what's conspiratorial about it?
Well, that there's a plan underway to crush us when the weather comes down on us ever harder.
Yeah, well, that's just kind of thinking.
No, I'm not saying, oh, that's not going to happen, or oh, you're wrong. I don't know that that is wrong, and I don't know that there is not such a plan somewhere. I just haven't seen it. What I do know is that there's a whole vast array of American people and huge corporations that seem to be in denial about climate change, even as we see it happening all over the United States and the world.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, there's something happening.
Yes, something's happening, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I just thought I'd throw that concept.
No, I appreciate it. I think it's a point to consider.
I keep finding myself always thinking, okay, all this stuff's happening in the context of climate.
I think that's wise. I don't disagree with you in that context. And I think at some point, it is very likely that there will be a crisis such that some kind of, what do you want to call it, some kind of fascist control might take hold all over the world.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think people are way ahead of where most of us think they are.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
Kashima was talking about that yesterday on Democracy Now, that the polling shows that people are way ahead of all the politicians. So I don't know. I'll let you go.
Well, I appreciate it. And I do think that hopefully the people, all of the people, whatever their belief systems and so on,
mm-hmm.
are probably beginning to realize and beginning to see and perhaps will organize to deal with the reality of the structure that we've created in the face of what you rightly point out will be an enormous crisis with climate change.
Mm-hmm.
So I thank you.
You're welcome.
Take care, man.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. 231-8187. We're talking, trying to focus in on the proposed recent deal with Iran on nuclear development. By the way, a question that really should be asked in all our minds. What right does any nation have to tell any other nation that it cannot develop nuclear power or even, God forbid, nuclear weapons? Remember that the thing is out of the, what's the term? The thing is out of the bag. The secret is gone. There is now, in fact, nuclear weapons development and missile development ranging all the way from North Korea, well beyond the old Soviet empire. And there is, Israel has nuclear weapons. Many, many countries have nuclear weapons. By the way Israel got nuclear weapons was apparently to persuade or allow, to get the United States to allow it to develop or take weapons of American design. You know, this is all a reality that Americans like to be in denial about. My great fear is that some idiot, whether they're an idiot from North Korea or an idiot from the United States or an idiot from Russia or an idiot from Saudi Arabia or wherever, decides to use a nuclear weapon. And then at that point, it's the cat that's out of the bag. At that point, the kitty cat's claws come out, and we all see what horror and devastation that can provoke. And we all have to remember, the only nation to use nuclear weapons in warfare, whatever your justification for that, is the United States, which used two different kinds of nuclear weapons, a plutonium weapon and a uranium weapon, against the Japanese when they were trying to figure out a way to surrender. Well, anyway, this is a real situation in the real world, as is climate change. All of these are in the context of what I believe to be an increasingly undemocratic process. When we say, well, we get to vote in this country, well, we have choices, yes. And we all should be organizing for the electoral process and other processes and striking out to build greater democracy in America in the streets or wherever. I really believe that. But the fact of the matter is, we have for a long, long time, beginning with the Cold War, had not much more choice than Tweedledee and Tweedledum in our direction as a nation state. All of it overall an imperialist direction, justified by an imperialist direction from the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union collapses, we come up with new enemies and new allies, and the process continues. And all the time, over all of that, the military, industrial, and I would call it congressional, interest group profits and continues to make money building the machines of war. The thing about that is, when you build these things, they almost always get used. So we need to pay attention to that. We need to understand the role of imperialism in the larger historical context as well. You know, why is Britain in the situation it's in today? Because its empire collapsed. Why did its empire collapse? Because the people of India and elsewhere demanded their own national governments and their national freedom. All of that is real. Not always a good thing. That is, for example, the separation of India and Pakistan, which I think going to prove to be a huge disaster in the greater history of the world. But it's all real, and all of it must be contended with if we are to build a more just world. Anyway, I want to hear from you. 231-8187. George, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
I recall hearing that KBOO has an Iranian hour. Is that right?
That's true. I don't know much about it because, frankly, I've never caught it. I assume that it's typical of a lot of the efforts here to create diversity.
Well, I caught part of it once, I think, but because I don't speak the language or understand it, I'm
right.
Not sure. But what I was thinking was, there are undoubtedly some people in Portland who are participating in this, and I would presume some of them have a really vivid knowledge of the 26-year rule of terrorism and plunder that the CIA Shah ran.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask if some of those people would please come forward and speak and tell us about the things. And there is a book which has some very vivid paragraphs in it about it, written by an Iranian armor author, and it's called The Crowned Cannibals. It's an old book from the 70s, but it's got some pretty frightening things in it about what the Shah did to journalists and children and women and the entire economy. So I just mentioned that. And then there's one thing the gentleman who called and stoutly defended almost everything about Israel, perhaps anyone who wonders if this guy had some really good points, they might want to read a book called The General's Son by an Israeli citizen whose father was an Israeli general. And this fellow in his book recalls his father over the dinner table for years telling his family that he was sick at heart at the abuses which the Israeli army and the Israeli state was inflicting, the human rights abuses, the torture and the murder and the theft of land, which the state of Israel was exercising on the Palestinian people. And this guy knew. He was an Israeli general, and his son is telling the story. So the fellow who called up, his argument isn't the only one.
No, I don't mean to suggest that it is. Oh, I wanted to get that opinion there because I think it's an opinion of many, many people in the United States, and I think it has a place in a discourse like this.
I think that's a wonderful thing to do. And so thanks so much. And if you could find somebody from the Iranian group, and they must be around KBOO sometime.
Oh, they are, I'm sure.
Ask some of them. I read in one book, I think it was by Max Baer, former CIA guy, that there were the Iranian students and authors after the U.S. embassy was thrown out, put together, I think he said something like a 26-volume history with documentation of what the U.S. did to Iran in the Shah's rule. It's in Farsi, of course, so, well, but some of those people would have some stuff to tell over the radio if we could get them to...
No, I think you're making a good point. Unfortunately, I have an hour a week, and there's so many issues, and I feel a little defensive, but I can't help but say that if I'm going to be able to cover stuff, I have to move from issue to issue.
Well, I think you're doing a great job, Joe. I sure, and let's get to have a program on how capitalism became late capitalism and why it's in a kind of box canyon sometime, okay?
Okay. Thanks. I think that's a good suggestion, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
And I do want to mention one other thing, since it's the question of Israel comes up. When I was a kid, and I'm a pretty old guy, I remember seeing many, many billboards and so on in the Los Angeles area supporting the creation of the State of Israel. We're talking about 47, 48, 49, that period of time. And I remember the slogan, which I'm not going to have it exactly right, but basically a land without people, a people without land. The logic being that Palestine was essentially empty and that it would be a homeland for the Jewish people after the Holocaust. And this was a huge movement with enormous support. Zionism at that point was at the height of its appreciation by liberals and even leftists. There was a labor party that was powerful in Israel, the creation of wonderful kinds of farms, which were virtually modeled after the collective farms of, I hate to say this, the Soviet Union, but with volunteer labor. The whole system was presented to us in a very positive light. We, ignorant the people that we were, I was a kid, you know, really a young kid, kind of believed all that. Gee, the Palestinians didn't, there weren't many of them, they didn't exploit the land appropriately. Surely this should be a place for the Jews who have suffered horribly from the Holocaust. It all made sense, except that we were ignoring the fact of the Palestinian people themselves, and except for the fact that we now know historically one of the major things that happened during the early settlements of the space called Israel and Palestine is that the Israeli forces moved whole villages out, moved whole households out, moved vast numbers of Palestinians out and created a refugee situation, which was terrible. And many of those people now have lived generation after generation in Jordan. So the fantasy of the establishment of Israel is an absolute justifiable response to the Holocaust, because after all, Palestine was kind of empty, is exactly that, a fantasy. Now, the situation in real politics is Israel exists, the Palestinian people exist, and the Palestinian state could exist. And the question is how to build that and make that real. Coming back to Iran, which is the focus today, I want to hear from more of you. 231-8187. Xander.
Joe, Joe, how are you?
Pretty good, man.
Good. So there was one point that Michael made that you acquiesced to that I would like to contest, and that was about the Palestinians' refusal of the peace deal back in 1990. And if you'll remember at the time, we never actually saw in the media a map that showed the deal, and if you actually Google it and take a look at the map, you will see why the Palestinians rejected it. It was completely ridiculous. I mean, akin to Native Americans in 1750 accepting the reservations that they have now. I mean, it left tons of settlements in it and just cut the West Bank up into, well, Swiss cheese, as people talked about it at the time. And it was completely unacceptable, and what it revealed is not that the Palestinians were intransigent, it revealed that the Israelis were not serious about a two-state solution. I really recommend people Google it.
I'm really glad let me first of all say I appreciate your correction of my acquiescence, number one. Number two, my understanding is that it wasn't a deal which was equitable at all, but again, I want to reiterate that I'm concerned I really want to allow an opinion that disagrees with you or me on this program, because it's one of the few opportunities on KBOO where that can happen. Now,
I fully support you in that, but there's opinions and there's facts, and I want to correct
you. No, and I'm really glad you're calling. And my understanding is that your position is correct.
I think so. Anyway, soldier on. Thank you.
Thank you for the call, very much. Xander is an old friend, and he's a very knowledgeable person, and his point is an important one. Let's hear from you, 231-8187. Carlos, you're on the air. Carlos is not reaching us. Who do we have? John, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Awesome. Thanks for taking my call. I'm kind of going to state something that may be obvious, but I think all things that are going on in the Middle East, the Arab uprising in Syria, Libya, Saudi Arabia, Iran, is exactly what America wants. We want instability in the region, because a united Muslim world would scare crap out of us, basically. it's my feeling that we just want the instability, and we crave it. And, you know, that just feeds into the military-industrial complex theory that you were talking about. You know, mm-hmm. It just, you know, increases profits and increases their stand in the world. And, it may seem like an obvious point. But,
no, I think it's important. I think you're making a good point. I also think it's really important to remember that the two unnecessary wars in Iraq were over oil.
Right.
And that's something we tend to forget.
Yeah.
And when we talk about oil, we're really talking about what is the interest of the vast military-industrial complex.
Exactly, which drives it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I'm glad you called with that.
Yeah, I think it's something that, I mean, people are always wondering, well, why can't we have peace there? Why can't there be stability? It's like, we don't want it. Like, we want instability because that keeps the Arabs from uniting and standing and being independent. I mean, it's the same thing we did with, I think, the minorities in this country. Like, you divide and conquer.
Well, that's true to a great extent, but it's also the case that this is only from my perspective. I don't want to represent it as being more than my position. There are people who probably share my view, but the insanity of religious difference, the classic and ongoing, ever unending struggle between Shia and Sunni is a force that is real and is very exploitable, consequently. So that's something to think about. You know? Anyway, I appreciate your point, and I appreciate your call. Thanks a lot.
Have a good day. Thanks.
I got to do this stuff. Coming up on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, agrarian reformer and author Wes Jackson speaks on restoring Earth Island. At 10, it's Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features an in-depth discussion on the significance of Obama's handshake and sit-down with Cuban President Raul Castro. Also, we hear directly from the parents of several young victims of lethal police violence. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you should be. You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. This station exists with your support alone. We don't get big government grants. We don't get huge. You can't imagine this, but big corporations are not pouring money into us. We depend on you. We think we do a very important job in Portland, in the Portland area, and we need your support. The best in music and the best in public affairs programming. 231-8187. We're talking about the Iran situation and the possibility of a peace agreement between Iran and the United States. Let's hear from you. Who do we have? Harvey, you're on the air.
All right. Well, you know, I'm going to give you something to bring us together, because there's so many things in the world that turn us against each other. And if anything is going to destroy humanity, it's our feeling for the other, that the other isn't part of us, that they should be killed and destroyed. So I'm thinking of trying to, you know, get into a more quantangled state of mind. But anyways, it turns out that April 16th is National Back Rub Day, the day after taxes.
Wait a minute. April 16th is National Back Rub Day?
Yeah, the day after taxes. You know, tax day is so stressful.
So Wednesday you pay your taxes, and Thursday you get a back rub?
Well, you know, the thing is that we share back rubs. Like, I'm in Berkeley here, and we hang out in cafes, and you know, we hang out in, you know, this is a scene where everybody feels comfortable, you're surrounded by other people are fully clothed, and we share neck rubs, and it helps, it brings people together.
I think it's like a good idea. I'm laughing because I hadn't thought of it, number one. Number two, I think it's kind of an interesting idea.
Well, thank you. I made it up a lot of years back, uh-huh. And I've been going on the talk shows talking about National Back Rub Day, the day after taxes, and I think that this is a way for us to, you know, even in the Bible you have the laying on of hands, but so there's so many forces, like I say, that divide and conquer us and make us hate each other, uh-huh. Over all these issues, and I say it's time to get back in touch with National Back Rub Day, the day after taxes.
So you say this is really a thing.
Well, I started creating it and bringing it into reality, and if people do it, then it becomes a thing.
Okay.
And I've been talking about it on various talk shows.
I can certainly see no reason not to have it.
Yeah, you know, like, if there's something about, you know, when babies aren't touched, they die. It's really, we are touchy-feely, even though it's a put-down, that's what we really are, and if we do that, then we will get back into a healing, a deeper healing than just standing and screaming at each other from across a fence. So I think that this is a good thing. So, Joe, I just want to thank you for your great program. And National Back Rub Day is coming right up, and so is your back rub.
Okay, thanks a lot, man.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. I would be insane to oppose National Back Rub Day. I mean, as long as it's appropriate and welcomed, let's do it. 231-8187. We're really talking about the possible Iran deal. Time doesn't allow us to discuss the details of it. I want to do a little history of Iran and the Persian Empire, just so you know that it is real and that it has a great history. And also, so that there can be an understanding of the role of the oil industry and the military-industrial complex in the creation of the crisis that exists in the Middle East today. Jim, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I love that idea, national back rub.
Why not?
I need one. But they put that in contrast to the issues of capitalism. You know, it's so contrary to capitalistic ideas. A back rub, good grief.
Yeah, really.
But that's what I wanted to talk about. Not back rubs, but capitalism and Drano.
Drano? You mean the poisonous stuff you dump in the drain?
Exactly. It's caustic. It's nasty. It kills fish. It'll rot your pipes. But that doesn't matter. That's irrelevant. That's collateral damage, because they used to have this ad campaign that says, once in every week, Drano in every drain. That was a brilliant ad campaign.
Well, it was. And I knew a girl who became pregnant in my high school and committed suicide using Drano.
Oh.
So, bleh. Yeah, really.
But anyway, the point of that is it's a perfect consumer product. because its only real purpose is to be consumed. You sell the stuff, people buy it, and they dump it down the drain.
Well, it also burns out metal pipes.
Yeah, they'll rot your pipes, but no, that's collateral damage. And
yeah,
who cares? That's irrelevant in capitalism. You build bombs.
Listen,
bombs generate collateral damage, and who cares? Because every time you pull that trigger, that's $1 million. You know, boom, boom.
Well, I hate to cut you off, man, with the Drano thing, but we run out of time. I want to urge everybody who listens to this show to become more politically active. We're going into another bizarre election season. We're going to have a choice once again between Tweedledum and Dumber. And we all need to be alert, and we need to be in the streets, and we need to be on the air, and we need to be on in the net, and we need to be struggling to build a better world, a peaceful world, a kinder world, and a more productive world without becoming more and more and more and more unhealthy. Climate change is real. We need to struggle hard. We need to listen to good music on KBOO, and we need to support this station. You all stay tuned.
School board elections are May 19th. What's your question?
Hi, this is Gwen Sullivan, the president of Portland Association of Teachers. Here is my question for school board candidates. Do you believe in management control over curriculum and curricular decisions? Or do you believe in empowering teachers to have academic freedom to best meet the needs of their students?
Tune in to KBOO April 27th through 30th at 5:45 for special school board election coverage.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, agrarian reformer and author Wes Jackson speaks on restoring Earth Island. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris